From KLW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I live in Noe Valley.
Corona Heights.
Western Addition.
I live in North Oakland, right by MacArthur BART Station.
Coming up, from prisoner to professor, a former inmate helps ex-cons create new lives.
I've been that person that people said, you should never be brought back to society. And now I'm here and teaching at a university, and I believe anybody can have that outcome.
Then we'll take a jog around San Quentin Prison.
You definitely don't want to run into anybody while you're running in prison. I have to be more aware of other people because they don't know I'm coming sometimes. It's more like an obstacle course.
And we'll get a crash course on staying safe on two wheels.
They may honk at you, and that means you are visible. Good job, Julie.
Training for safety and success, that's today on Cross Currents.
So-called turnstile recidivism.
Recidivism, reduction, and reentry.
We're going to have a lower recidivism rate, so we need to measure recidivism.
Okay.
Recidivism. It's the rate at which former prisoners end up back behind bars. According to the Bureau of Justice statistics, 60% of people released from California jails and prisons return within 3 years. Some organizations are tackling this problem by helping people transition from prison back to home life. But one former prisoner says it's a matter of encouraging inmates to change their values long before they're released. Reporter Karina Yaffe caught up with him to tell his story.
At the age of 49, Michael Santos is getting his first taste of college.
You see, it's a very big campus. Understand there are some 30,000 students enrolled here.
We're at San Francisco State, walking through the main quad, and Santos, he's beaming like a kid.
I always come much earlier and just spend the day here to kind of soak up the university vibe that I missed when I was a teenager and in my early 20s.
Santos is not a student or a visitor. He's a lecturer in the Criminal Justice Department, a job he landed in September, just 2 weeks after his release from 26 years in prison. When he was younger, Santos ran a cocaine smuggling operation out of Miami, distributing to the rest of the country. He idealized Al Pacino's character in Scarface, the film about a tough-talking drug runner.
I actually heard this sound on the radio of advertising a movie called Scarface, and I heard the sound of the guy's voice. I said, boy, that sounds like my dad. He had the same accent. And it was Al Pacino, of course, pretending to be a Cuban. And I saw the movie and I said, whoa, that looks so cool. And that led me down the path to perdition.
He was caught. In 1987, Santos was convicted and sentenced to 45 years in prison without the possibility of parole.
I was 23 and I'd never been incarcerated before, had no idea, and I was sent to a high security penitentiary in Atlanta.
But when faced with spending most of his life in prison, Santos changed his attitude. He began reading, discovering Socrates and other philosophers. That set him on a new path.
It inspired me to think, what can I do? And I came across with this principled plan. I have to work towards educating myself. I have to work toward contributing to society. And I have to work toward building a support network. And if I could do that, then I could walk out of prison differently from the way that I walked in.
Santos's days became highly regimented. Up by 6, an hour or more at the gym, and on to a job in the library or the factory. He took his meals alone and volunteered at the hospital after hours in order to isolate himself from others. He also began pursuing his education, earning a bachelor's degree and later a master's in anthropology and politics. And he began writing, first the blog, then books about his life in prison. He criticized the number of inmates held in solitary confinement, and how little encouragement and hope they got.
In prison, there are two different messages that occur in every institution. From the staff members, prisoners are going to hear, you've got nothing coming. From other prisoners, they're going to hear, the only thing you need to survive in this environment is a ball of hate in your stomach and a knife. That message doesn't prepare anybody for success.
Santos was released from prison in August of 2012, his sentence reduced for good behavior. He spent a year on community supervision with a tracking device on his ankle and a curfew each night. During the day, he worked at a Petaluma lumber company. He met the owner while in prison. At night, he returned to a halfway house in San Francisco's Tenderloin. This August, he finally moved into his own home, a modest two-story in Petaluma, which he shares with his wife, Carol.
I'll have a little bit, yeah, thank you.
The couple attended the same high school and reconnected while Michael was in prison. They married in 2003, and Carol moved 22 times in order to live close to where Michael was being held. Santos pours himself a cup of coffee in the kitchen of his home. He's already run 15 miles this morning, part of the strict discipline he acquired in prison. Soon, Carol joins him at the breakfast table.
Want some water, honey?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you.
The mundane everyday is something Michael and Carol don't take for granted, because they never had it. For a decade, the two could see each other only in visitation rooms, with guards keeping a close eye on their every move.
You know, there were really hard times because he was moved a lot, I moved a lot, and there were struggles, you know, in the moment that felt really hard and that sometimes felt like, how are we going to get through this?
Carol says her husband taught her to set goals and then work toward them, a focus that helped them both during his long sentence. Since his release, Michael has been traveling the country giving talks to prisons, universities, and nonprofits, advocating the same ethic and attitude that transformed his life. He's also created a life skills program he calls the Straight A Guide. The video tutorial is aimed at getting inmates to think about ways they can give to society.
And the evidence will show that our program helps people in your care do away with criminal attitudes, change criminal lifestyles, avoid hanging out with criminal associates, and preparing themselves for a more successful, law-abiding life upon release.
The goal of the video is to reform the criminal justice system, not through new laws, but something far less tangible, by transforming the way prisoners view themselves.
But because I followed the same values-based program that I've spun into our Straight A Guide, I emerged on August the 13th, 2012, immediately ready to begin contributing as a law-abiding citizen.
Santos's message is resonating. His guide was recently purchased by the Santa Clara County Juvenile Hall, as well as the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Office. He's also reaching future corrections officers, like the one sitting in on his class every week.
Hello, students of CJ 451. I'm sorry I'm late.
The class is called The Architecture of Imprisonment and includes first-person accounts by Santos, as well as guest speakers such as parole officers and probationers.
What I am talking about of how this system is so vested in its policies and its procedures that it doesn't look at the human being and it doesn't look at how an individual is trying to prepare for success.
In class, Santos often talks about long sentences that harden criminals. He also criticizes the rigid system of risk assessments, such as mandatory drug tests for probationers who have never had a problem with drugs. Things like that, he says, often force people to choose between skipping work in order to be in compliance or returning to prison.
So if I could make a case, I have a job waiting, I have a place to live, I have stability, it would seem that any probation office should say, this is a path to success. But that's not a message that's getting through to most people in the architecture of incarceration. All they're hearing is, this is the policy, it's not going to work.
For 26 years, Santos says he and his fellow inmates were told that they could do nothing to redeem themselves.
I've been that person that people said, you should never run back to society. And now I'm here and teaching at a university, and I believe anybody can have that outcome. And I think that we as a society would be far better off if we sowed that message of hope rather than perpetuated this system of failure.
With nearly 2.5 million people doing time in America's prisons, the potential audience for his message is huge. For Cross Currents, I'm Karina Yaffe.
For more criminal justice coverage, go to klw.org. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Holly Kernan.
For some inmates, the concern is less about returning to prison and more about whether they'll ever get out at all. More than 10% of prisoners in the U.S. are serving a life sentence. One of those lifers is at the center of a new story from the team at the San Quentin Prison Report, which is a collaboration between KALW and the inmates making radio from inside of California's oldest prison.
SQPR is a media collective of prisoners and volunteers from the community working together to give voice to personal growth, social transformation, and restorative justice.
So how would you pass the time if you were sentenced to a life behind bars? For Chris Schumacher, freedom comes in the shape of a running track. Once an addict, he now finds that exercise curbs his destructive urges, and the thousands of miles he's run around San Quentin have changed the way he views his life. But just like with any other course, there's bound to be a few obstacles. From SQPR, Greg Eskridge has our story.
You know, I set a goal for myself, like I'm going to run 5 miles or I'm going to run 10 miles. And then once I have the distance set, then I can start thinking about time.
On a typical day, there are approximately 500 inmates on the lower yard, accompanied by 25 visiting geese. So while running, he must maneuver around them, similar to someone trying to run in a crowded shopping mall.
You definitely don't want to run into anybody while you're running in prison. I have to be more aware of other people because they don't know I'm coming sometimes. So I almost have to be aware for the both of us.
To get their attention, he yells out, "Track, track," to indicate a runner is approaching.
It's more like an obstacle course, and I'll try to navigate my way around them. And sometimes that doesn't work, and I have to slow down and pass safely.
Schumacher began running in the Air Force, where he says he had to run 2 miles in under 20 minutes.
But it wasn't until I came to San Quentin that I kind of really got into it, really got into the zone, and this is where I ran my first full 5 miles.
According to public health information, jogging has many mental and health benefits. In addition, he says running also gives him a greater sense of awareness.
For me, while I'm running, I'm able just to kind of be with my body, be with my breath, kind of get into the zone, be in tune with what's going on around me, a passion. But definitely something that keeps me steered away from those other negative influences that we know, you know, are so common in prison.
For Schumacher, this is more than a morning jog. You see, he once suffered from alcohol and drug abuse, which played a part in his incarceration. So for him, it's about his sobriety.
You definitely get that those endorphins kicking off and that runner's high. I know that's important to me. Because I used to use other things to get high, you know, drugs, alcohol. And since giving all of that up, running and exercising has been an outlet for me.
While running towards his sobriety, he began to notice the benefits from jogging.
First of all, my physical health, you know, cardiovascular health. It also helps me control my blood sugars, being a diabetic. I even get a lot of emotional and spiritual benefits, you know, while I'm running. You know, a sense of an accomplishment, a sense of achieving one's goals, the way it kind of takes me out of the prison environment for a little while.
After finding his recovery and exercising, he would go on to create a program called Fitness Monkey, which was designed to empower others.
Fitness Monkey was an idea that I formulated while going through the Last Mile curriculum, and that's a program here at San Quentin that deals with entrepreneurship, social media, and pursuing our passions. My recovery was first and foremost something I'm passionate about, and then also physical fitness. So by combining the two, I came up with this idea called Fitness Monkey, which is an online life coaching service that provides people with kind of like personalized playbooks designed to assist members of all levels and lifestyles to overcome substance abuse by developing a healthy addiction to fitness.
Now 40 years old, Schumacher has been clean for over 13 years. He goes on to reflect on his new sober life.
It feels great. I mean, it feels very liberating, you know, even inside prison. You know, there's some things I can't control, like when I'll go home. But one thing I can control and keep clean is myself. You know, I feel like I'm in a much better place now, even though I'm inside San Quentin, than I was in my addiction before I came to prison.
Despite Schumacher's long struggle with drugs and alcohol, he never gave up on obtaining sobriety and essentially found it through fitness. In fact, he's now training for the annual San Quentin Marathon. I'm Greg Eskridge, reporting for SQPR, reminding you to take the time to listen.
That report is part of KALW's collaboration with the San Quentin Prison Report. This is Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Holly Kernan. Running is great exercise, but if you're looking for an alternative to driving your car, you might want to hop on two wheels instead. Right now, the San Francisco Bay Area is in the middle of a spare the air season, and commuters are reminded to ditch their vehicles in favor of a cleaner mode of transportation. But to ride a bike, you don't need a license, and there isn't a test. So how do you know if you're riding safely? In this story from our archives, our own Julie Kane reports on what any beginning biker needs to know about hitting the Bay Area roads.
When I was a kid, I rode everywhere, all the time. But now that I'm an adult living in a big city, I find lots of reasons not to get on my bike. It's not that I don't like riding, it's just that I'm kind of afraid. It's intimidating out there. I don't really know the rules, and I have to admit, I'm also kind of vain. Not only do I look incredibly goofy in a bike helmet, but I get possibly the worst helmet hair of anyone you've ever met. So every morning I weigh the options. Either I pollute the earth by driving my car to work, or I do the right thing and ride my bike. You can't always do the right thing. I feel really badly about all this, so I've decided to take action.
The first thing you want to do is make sure your bike is in working order.
It's a sunny morning, and Bonnie Wayman is taking me on an urban bike riding class in downtown Oakland. Wayman is the education director at the East Bay Bicycle Coalition, and anybody can take her classes. They're completely free, funded by sales taxes. We meet outside the Lake Merritt BART station, so she can give me some basic pointers before we start our ride.
We have a very simple little test we do called the ABC Quick Check. A is for air. You want to reach down and give your tires a squeeze.
So will you feel mine and tell me what you think?
That feels pretty squishy.
Uh-oh. Squishy? Yeah. That can't be good.
B is for brakes. One of the tests you can do to make sure that your brakes are going to work, right, is to squeeze your brakes and push your bike forward and see if it'll move. C is for, you want to make a guess what C is for?
Coffee.
C is for your chain. So you want to look down and make sure that your chain is actually on.
Okay, I know what you're thinking. For a lot of you, ABC could also stand for awfully basic check. But for someone like me, just going through the process makes me feel a lot more confident.
So should we put some air in your tire?
That would be great, yeah. While we get ready to go, Wayman teaches me another of her bike riding mantras. She's got a lot of them, but this is the most important one. She tells me that the best way to stay safe on a bike is to be
visible, predictable, and aware.
As I'm about to find out, that means I should use lights and reflectors and brightly colored clothing. I should ride with traffic, not against it. And I should boldly take lanes, even if I make drivers really, really mad.
It's the opposite of what you want to do. If you feel that, oh my God, I think they're going to hit me, it's too close, that means you need to move to the left. They may honk at you, and that means you are visible. Good job, Julie.
Okay, if they honk, I'm visible. That's good. But I still think I'm going to need additional protection, which is a problem.
Julie, we're going to put our helmets on.
To me, helmets mean one thing.
You know, if you're going somewhere and you know you're going to have helmet head, to have some cute little hat that you put on right after and then you wear a hat for the day and you're sort of jaunty.
that might be another option.
Oh, I like the idea of being sort of jaunty. Because hairstyles are not her top priority, Wayman makes sure I've got my helmet on right. Yep, she's got a mantra for that, too.
Eyes, ears, mouth.
That is, you should be able to see the top of your helmet when you look up. Your ear straps should come to a V underneath your ears, and your chin strap should be tight, but still loose enough to let you open and close your mouth.
Okay, so we know our bike's ready to go.
Yes.
We know our helmets fit.
Check.
And Wayman then tells me what may be my very favorite factoid of the class, that the vast majority of bike crashes don't involve cars or other bikes or even pedestrians. Most of the time, people just fall over. All by themselves. Which means it's time for another mantra. Power pedal up.
One pedal up, one pedal down.
I like this mantra the best. Power pedal up, power pedal up. It's like summoning the only bike riding superpower I have, which I'm gonna need because it's finally time to start a ride.
All right, so power pedal, beautiful. Shoulder check over your left shoulder, make sure nobody's coming. And we go.
We're taking a 3-mile ride along Lake Merritt, through Oakland Chinatown, and eventually under the 880 freeway. Wayman rides in front, which makes me happy because I am actually pretty nervous. We're riding right in the flow of cars.
All right, we are going to turn left here. And we are on the right side of the lane. So, first I'm going to look behind me. Check nobody's coming. Put my left arm to signal that I'm moving over.
Oh, it's scary.
Signal.
I actually wish I had one of those student driver orange triangles on my back so people would know to give me a wide berth. But then I start to relax a little and even enjoy myself.
I am seeing all these great things that I've never seen before. I'm so excited. There's a vintage and treasure shop that I've never seen in my life. And this looks like kind of a Ethiopian market.
I'm getting pretty comfortable on my bike now, enjoying the ride and the sunny day in Oakland. And then it's time to head into the complicated traffic of Chinatown.
I'm kind of scared.
What worries you?
I'm afraid of getting hit by a car.
Okay.
Yeah.
The flow of traffic will move with you and see you and work around you if you're in it with them.
We merge into traffic, dodging double parked delivery trucks and pedestrians who dart out suddenly from between boxes of produce piled high on the sidewalks. Ahead of us is the roaring 880 freeway. I kind of want to just end the ride here and grab some dim sum and call it a day. But then the light turns green.
Okay, we're going straight through.
And we ride our bikes right under the freeway. And then we emerge. We're in the quiet warehouse zone around Jack London Square. Birds are chirping. It's another part of town I've never really seen before. I still feel nervous around all those cars, and I still don't love the helmet hair. But I do like just riding around in the streets in the city. My city. The city which, thanks to my bike, I've seen a little more of. In Oakland, I'm Julie Kane for Cross Currents.
You can find more information about safety classes by the East Bay Bicycle Coalition at our website, kalw.org. Just click on Cross Currents. That's it for today's Cross Currents. Our team includes Julie Kane, Jen Chien, Audrey Dilling, Chris Hoff, Nina Gensler-Debs, Liz Mack, Daphne Matsiaraki, Mary Reese, Judy Silber, and Rachel Wong. Today's show was produced by Ashley Ann Krigbaum and engineered by Seth Samuel. Casey Miner is our senior editor. Our senior producer is Martina Castro. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. And because of your support, we can proudly say that we are listener-supported radio. The music you're hearing is being played by the Tommy Igoe Big Band. Igoe says he began drumming at the age of 2. That's something many of us can probably claim. But I bet no one else has toured nationally with big-name performers and created the drumming cues for The Lion King on Broadway. Igoe now plays and teaches in and around San Francisco. The Tommy Igoe Big Band will appear at Yoshi's in San Francisco tomorrow, performing the works of Duke Ellington, Count Basie, and Thelonious Monk. Music starts at 8 p.m. All of that information is at KALW.org. Just click on Cross Currents. For Cross Currents, I'm Holly Kernan.